Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. I'm a broker here at StoneX. I work in the commodities department, helping producers and consumers hedge their commodity risk. We also work with speculators, do futures and options, OTC and structured products. I also do consulting for our hedge clients too. If you have any questions about what I do here, please give me a call at 800-958-9470 or 312-706-7610. You can also email me at craig.turner@stonex.com. If you are a client, you like what you hear, you need to do something with your account or your strategies, please give me a call anytime. And if you like the podcast, please go give us a positive review on iTunes. And if you want to check out the newsletter, go on over to turnerstake.com. So let's get into it here. We are, hope everyone had a great 4th of July. It is at a nice time with the family and my neighbors. It's always a very long day. Honestly, I think it's the longest day of the year. Not that I'm complaining, but just a lot goes on between fun runs and parades. And then eventually the fireworks seem to always get over at 10 o'clock at night. And then you go to work the next day. It's a tough next day at work. But hope everyone had a good time and a safe holiday too. So let's get into it here. We'll start off with the economy and some macro events. Basically, we are seeing, so we're now done with the second quarter in the United States. And if you go, the Federal Reserve in Atlanta has a nice tracker called GDP Now. And it kind of gives you an idea of where the GDP is for the prior quarter. And in the past week, they've been projecting on that site maybe a minus 1.9 to minus 2.1 negative GDP number for the second quarter. This would be after a minus 1.6 GDP. So I haven't seen it in the news a whole lot or in the business press, but I mean, it's out there. It looks like technically the United States was in a recession for the first half of this year. Now, these numbers are lagging. You know, some economists think that the United States and the rest of the world may showing signs of coming out of recession. And that's the thing with recession, because the technical definition is two negative GDP quarters in a row. You know, it already, you know, you could be coming out of it by the time it gets defined. But we'll see. But that's where we are now. Having GDP growth being down 1.5 and 2% quarter over quarter is not the end of the world. It does slow things down. And as interest rates come up, it'll slow things down a little bit more. You know, high prices for energy also have an effect on economic growth. But, you know, the labor market's still strong. So that's a good sign. Usually you don't have a severe and deep recession if employment can stay strong. I know the recessions can be quite mild if unemployment stays strong or if employment stays strong. So, and I think, and the labor market is tight and it looks like people are still hiring. So that's kind of the silver lining in some of those GDP numbers. And we'll get the official estimates at the end of the month, but just the preliminary numbers coming out of the Atlanta Federal Reserve would suggest there was a minor recession in the United States for the first half of the year. So switching on over then to the Federal Reserve, they have a meeting in July. I want to say it's next week. And they'll most likely have, I mean, the odds are that, or the thought is they'll raise interest rates again by 75 basis points and then maybe 50 for the rest of the year. If that's the case, let's say they raise by 75 in July and then another 50 in September, another 50 in November. And their last meeting in the year, I think, is like mid to late December. know, they could be at 3.5% on the Fed funds rate heading into that December meeting. That's probably the most aggressive that they would be if the economic numbers start looking better and energy prices come down and labor stays strong, employment stays strong. Who knows? Maybe they go 50-50-25 or something like that. But for the in the eyes of the Fed, they view neutral interest rate policy is when the Fed funds rate is at 2.5%. If the Fed funds rate, which is the overnight lending rate they charge to other banks, is below 2.5%, you know, for them that means we have a dovish or loose monetary policy. At 2.5, it's neutral. Anything above 2.5 is more aggressive and hawkish. So to fight inflation, to really fight it, there's this idea that you got to be at 2.5 or higher. Now we're at 1.75 right now. So another 75 basis point hike will get us to 2.5, which means we'd be neutral on the interest rate. And hopefully that will help with some of the inflation concerns. And then if you go up 50 basis points September and then 50 basis points in November and we're at 3.5%, then you would really think in the market, you know, you would expect inflation to start coming down and probably maybe even coming down a little bit more aggressively, especially if we can get some of the food and energy prices solved just from the supply side, which I think is easier to do on the grain, oil seed, and animal protein side than it is to do in the energy markets right now. But those are the thoughts. So the stock market today is up. I want to say it's out, technically out of the recession zone. It's for the E-mini S&P. Last time I checked, we're trading around 3850. I want to say like right at 3800 was, or a little bit above 3800 was that 20% line. So technically, the S&P is coming out of that recession zone, or bear market zone, I should say, coming out of the bear market zone. So that's interesting to see. And I think the market's getting very comfortable with some of these higher interest rates. It'll be interesting to see the next set of CPI numbers and what they say for inflation. Moving on over to the energy markets. The natural gas has been all over the place. We had that big shutdown in Texas and we couldn't get a lot of basically there were no more exports for liquid naturified gas going over to Europe, where it was severely reduced. And we broke from what, like $8 in natural gas all the way down into the fives. I think today it's up 75 cents, trading in the sixes again. I mean, clearly there was some liquidation going on there. I think some of the European funds had to, get out of some of these energy markets or blew out, and we sent prices pretty far down. The thing is, for natural gas to keep on going higher, we need more use of it here in the United States, which means more coal, less coal use, and more liquefied natural gas going overseas. You know, the theory would be, you can only export about 12.5 BCF. Liquid natural gas out of the United States. You're kind of capped at that. But what you can do is a lot of these utility companies can run on either coal and natural gas. And if they primarily run on natural gas, that means coal can go around to the rest of the world. It's a lot easier to transport coal. Since there's so much natural gas here, in theory, that would help alleviate, let's say, energy prices around the world. It would bring up energy prices here in the United States a little bit. And especially the natural gas market too. So that is where we are in that. With crude oil, it's even a more interesting story. We've had a big, at one point we got back to $100 in crude, and I thought we could be 115, 120. But you got to remember, energy is very, very sensitive to economic growth and recessions. And to see the market go from 115 or 110 all the way down to 100 or even lower. Can definitely happen in a volatile market like this. I think there's two really interesting developments going on in crude oil right now. One, it looks like the latest influx of crude oil from the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. A lot of that ended up not being used in the United States. I think it looks like from the latest reports out of Reuters and some of the other news agencies that the barrels of oil went to foreign countries or were sold to foreign countries. The reason being really is just because of refinery capacity. And, you know, the really, you know, we have two things going on. One is just the production of crude oil and energy, which is still going strong, just not as fast a rate as, you know, maybe the market would like to see. But it's the refining capacity that we're losing about 1 million barrels a day in refining capacity. And it's just because the infrastructure is old. It needs to be maintained. We haven't built a new refinery here since the 70s. It's expensive to get these. It's very expensive to now overhaul these operations, require billions of dollars. And the companies that own it are looking at the writing at the wall and, you know, government policies and where the industry is moving. And they don't want to dump billions of dollars into, you know, petroleum operations and refineries, you know, that are taking crude and creating diesel and heating oil and gasoline, you know, when everything's moving to alternative fuels. It's not a good investment. It's hard for them to get money from the banks to do it. And they're getting no help from the government or the EPA or anyone else on that side of things, the regulatory bodies. And here we are. So you can have a situation where you have oil coming from the strategic reserve, not enough capacity, refining capacity to use it. So not only do, you know, heating oil and gasoline prices stay high along with crude, the only thing you really can do is then get rid of the oil by selling it overseas. So it's just going to Europe or South America or Asia and China. And it's really, you know, and meanwhile, we're depleting the SPR. So that is the situation in the energy markets. I really don't know what to make of it. I think, my gut says that's a bullish story. I mean, if eventually recessions or mild recessions end and then we go back to economic growth, and at that point, even if you're producing more crude, you can't, you know, you need to be able to refine it and convert it into a fuel. And that's going to be a struggle right now. So I think, you know, until one of two things has to happen here as the economy recovers or grows again. And it's, you're either going to have more refining capacity for petroleum products, or you have to have more alternative fuels. Maybe use natural gas more, might be another one, but it's an issue, and it's not an issue. And it's an issue that's not going away anytime soon until things change on a policy front and a regulatory front. And even in an investment and where things are going with fossil fuels and alternative renewables. So that's where we are in the energy markets. I think we're just kind of biding some time here to eventually go higher, especially in the refined products. Finally, in the grain markets, we've had a big correction here in the grains. Wheat has been down, $5, you know, from the highs. I think spring wheat went from 14 to 9, you know, over the past month or two. You know, corn got below December, new crop corn under $6 was trading in the high fives. November soybeans made a run at 13, and everyone's asking, you know, what's going on here? Well, number one, I mean, if we think, you know, before Ukraine, prices were elevated to begin with, just because of we had drought in South America, and that really boosted up vegetable oils, and the grains followed. And before that, last year, Canada had a very significant drought, and it basically wiped out anywhere between 30 and 40% of wheat and canola, which were then bolt, you know. So you've got a wheat story that was going on with Canada, along with canola, which helped out oil seeds, you know, and that's this time last year. And then you get into the winter and you get the disaster that happened in Brazil, which, you know, took off 20 to 30 million metric tons of soybean production. Which ended up also being very bullish on the oilseed market. And then you have Russia invading Ukraine, which, you know, is very bullish wheat and corn, and to some extent the oilseeds. And you already had tight stocks in vegetable oil. And through each of those instances, you know, the markets kept on leveling up. You know, wheat went from $6 to $8 during the whole production issues through, you know, Canada. And then it was able to break out over $8 and into 10 and higher when you have the Ukraine issues. And the last part of all this, wheat, the last part of the rally here when corn went to $8 and soybeans were $17, I mean, things are tight on those balance sheets, but you can't get there without wheat going as high as it did and how to do that extreme price rationing that it did. And it kind of helped things. It helped the ag markets go higher together. Now that there's more winter wheat available and new crop is coming available, wheat has broken. It doesn't mean we're going back to $4, $5, and $6 in wheat, but it also means we don't need to be $12, $13, and $14. So where does that really put wheat? You know, is it the $7, $8, $9 range? Most likely for the moment. The thing is, what's going to happen here is in September and October, Ukraine takes over and Russia, the Black Sea, just take over the export market, especially on the wheat side. And, you know, while new, you know, we had, the world had to aggressively price ration wheat exports from March until this month, until new crop supply could come on the market in a big way. And we've seen the break. And that's great. But now what's going to happen here is, and you're seeing a lot of buying, you know, you've seen Egypt coming and buying a lot of wheat. You see Pakistan negotiating for 500,000 metric tons. And you see a lot of countries that buy wheat are coming in here and trying to get a lot of deals done. So the thing is, you know, there's a huge wild card right now. What's going to happen here in the fall? So, you know, and what's going to be available coming out of the Black Sea? So it's still going to be volatile. We could have some weather issues here too. You know, I think, you know, new crop corn at $6, you know, to go higher, we're going to have some serious weather issues. Otherwise, we probably leak lower into first notice day at the end of August. You know, I'm guessing $5 a floor, $5.25 if we have a 1.5 billion carryout. You'd think we'd go down there if we have no weather issues. Soybeans, a little bit more tricky, you know, losing those acres. But it looks like we could have a trend line yield or higher. You know, if we have a 200 million carryout and soybeans, that's still relatively tight, or it is tight. You know, we're talking 5-6% stock to usage. So, you know, soybeans $12-$13 kind of makes sense around there. And the big wild card is going to be wheat. You know, and everything's going to be dependent on the Black Sea. So I wouldn't say this recent decline has been a head fake. Basically, the recent decline happened because the markets ran up so much. And had to, again, wheat going to $12, $13, and $14 and dragging corn up to $8 and soybeans up to $17, which is what happened, had everything to do with extreme price rationing and the need for it in order to get to the next major harvest. You know, so that's why we saw wheat prices do what they did and drag their other grain and oil seeds along in March, April, May, and into June. Now we're relaxed. We are at these levels. We're going to see what the summer crop does here in North America and also in Europe. And then we'll just see where we are with Ukraine and Russia. So I don't think the volatility is done. You know, a lot can happen between now and September and October, or not happen, you know, on the Black Sea front. We'll just have to go. So if I'm a producer, if I'm a farmer, I'm still selling into these rallies. And, you know, if you can make some of these prices work, I would do it. I would also take a look at selling 23. If I'm a consumer, I'm buying as much as I can now as these prices are breaking for the next couple of months. So for getting all my coverage for the third quarter and maybe even doing it for the fourth quarter and then for 2023, just buying some cheap calls or some kind of call out into 23, just in case things get worse and not better in the Black Sea. And hopefully things get better and prices come down, but you never know. I think that's the way we're going to be playing it for a while. Wheat probably has a range of, I mean, we could be $2 up, $2 down, depending on how things go over the next 3 to 4 months. Corn, 1.5 billion carryout before the pandemic would have been $4 corn, or around there, plus or minus 20, 30 cents. You know, these days, I'm going to guess it's five just because the price of everything else is so much higher. But that's another wild card, too. And soybeans, acreage, when acreage changes by a million acres, it has an impact of 50 million bushels or so on the balance sheet. But the yield going up or down one can have an impact of about 90 million bushels up or down on the balance sheet. And conditions for, you know, so I think what's going to, so the potential for soybean prices, you know, with pod filling happening and, you know, let's just call August weather be the most important, still have the potential for some serious volatility in the soybean market. If we have a 53 yield nationally because, you know, everyone gets rain and it all goes well, everything goes well, you know, all of a sudden we're adding 150 million bushels on the balance sheet. If we're at a 50 yield, you know, we're taking 150 off, which would, you know, could, and to me, that's the difference between, you know, 150 to 200 million bushels either way in this market could be the difference between going back to and even surpassing all-time highs or going to, you know, $10. So it's going to be, the volatility is there. So we'll just have to keep an eye on that. If you have any, you know, questions for me, or you want to go over any kind of strategies because of what we're seeing in the markets, where we think they're going, give me a call. It's going to be very volatile here. There is no reason to be leveraged up into anything or get oversold or overbought in any of these markets right now. And, you know, based on your operation or your business, you know, we're always happy to help out and provide advice for, you know, where we think people should be for the end of 2022 and then also heading into 2023. So if you have any questions, you can give me a call, 312-706-7610. You can also email me at craig.turner@stonex.com. And yeah, it's we'll see. Good luck out there. Let me know if you need anything. I will be talking with you next week, and we'll see what the Fed says. I know we've got the USDA also next week too, and it'll be interesting to see what if they comment on yields. So good luck, everyone, and have a great rest of your week. I'll talk to you later.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.